According to John, the first chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who are born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He comes after me, ranks ahead of me, because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. Today is actually the second day of Christmas, but because we're not going to be gathering on the 6th, we're also celebrating an early Epiphany. And so what I'm going to do is a little different today, because I think Christmas is a time for stories. And so today I'm going to tell you a story. You know the story of the three wise men of the East and how they traveled from far away to offer their gifts at the manger in Bethlehem. But have you ever heard the story of the other wise man who also saw the star at its rising and set out to follow it, yet did not arrive with the others to offer his gifts to the newborn Jesus? Have you heard of his great wanderings in search of this child, this king, and the way in which he found him at the last? I will tell it. This is an abridgment and adaptation of the story by Henry Van Dyke, published in 1885, called The Other Wise Man. In the days of Augustus Caesar, when Herod reigned in Jerusalem, there lived in the city of Ecbatana, among the mountains of Persia, a certain man named Artaban. He was a man of great learning and wealth, one who was skilled in healing and the knowledge of the stars. One day he called a meeting of the other magi in the area to tell them that the time had come for the fulfillment of the prophecy of the birth of a great king that would be announced by a sign in the heavens. Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar were waiting at a certain location outside Babylon, and if the sign appeared as they had predicted, they would wait for him for 10 days and then make their pilgrimage to Jerusalem to find and worship the one who had been promised. Artaban said, "I believe that the sign will come tonight. I've made ready for the journey by selling all my possessions and buying these three jewels, a sapphire, a ruby, and a pearl, to present as tribute to the king. I invite you to make this pilgrimage with us so that we may worship the newborn king together. And he showed them three great gems, one blue as a fragment of night sky, one redder than a ray of sunshine, and one as pure as a peak of a snow mountain at twilight. But his friends looked at him with mistrust and pity. One said, "This is a vain dream. It comes from too much looking at the stars and the cherishing of lofty thoughts. No king will ever rise from the broken race of Israel, and no end will ever come to the eternal strife of light and darkness. He who looks for it is a chaser of shadows. Farewell." Others offered their excuses for why they could not join the quest. They had work to do. They had recently married. This quest was not for them. His father said, "My son, it may be that the light of truth is in the sign that has appeared in the skies, and that it will surely lead to the prince and the mighty brightness. Or it may be that it's only a shadow of the light, and then he who follows it will have a long pilgrimage and an empty search. But it is better to follow even the shadow of the best than to remain content with the worst. And those who would see wonderful things must often be ready to travel alone. I'm too old for this journey, but my heart shall be a companion of the pilgrimage day and night, and I shall know the end of your quest. Go in peace." Left to himself, Artaban put his jewels away and went to take up his vigil to search the night sky. As he watched, Jupiter and Saturn came together like drops of flame, and an azure spark was born out of the darkness beneath them. "It is the sign," Artaban said. "The king is coming, and I will go to meet him." Artaban saddled his swiftest horse and started toward Babylon to meet the other Magi. Day after day he traveled, and by nightfall of the 10th day, he approached the outskirts of Babylon. In a little island of desert palm trees, the horse scented something, slowed down, and then stood still, with every muscle quivering. Artaban dismounted. In the dim starlight, he saw the form of a man lying in the roadway. His humble dress and haggard face showed him to be one of the poor Hebrew exiles who still lived in Babylon. His pallid face bore the mark of the deadly fever that ravaged the marshlands of Babylon at that season of year. As Artaban turned to go, a sigh came from the man's lips, and his bony fingers closed upon Artaban's robe. Artaban was torn. How could he stay here in the darkness to minister to a dying stranger? If he lingered but for an hour, he could hardly reach the meeting place at the appointed time. His companions would think that he had given up the journey. They would go without him. But if he went on now, this man would surely die. Should he risk the great reward of his divine faith for the sake of a single deed of human love? Should he turn aside, if only for a moment, from the following of the star, to give a cup of cold water to a poor, perishing Hebrew? "God of truth and purity," he prayed, "direct me in the holy path, the way of wisdom, which thou only knowest." Then he turned back to the sick man. Hour after hour, he labored as only a skillful healer of disease can do. And at last the man's strength returned. He sat up and looked about him. "Who are you, and why have you sought me here to bring back my life?" "I'm Artaban, one of the Magi of the city of Ecbatana, and I'm going to Jerusalem in search of the one who is to be born king of the Jews, a great prince and deliverer of all men. I dare not delay any longer upon my journey, for the caravan that has waited for me may depart without me. But see, here is all I have left of bread and wine, and here is a potion of healing herbs. When your strength is restored, you can find the dwelling of the Hebrews among the houses of Babylon." The Jew raised his trembling hand solemnly to heaven. "Now may the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob bless and prosper the journey of the merciful and bring him in peace to his desired haven. I have nothing to give you in return, only this, that I can tell you where the Messiah must be sought. For our prophets have said that he should be born not in Jerusalem, but in Bethlehem of Judah. May the Lord bring you in safety to that place, because you have had pity upon the sick. It was already long past midnight. Artaban rode in haste, and his horse, restored by the brief rest, ran eagerly. But when they arrived at the meeting place, it was deserted. At the end of the terrace, Artaban saw a little cairn of broken bricks, and under them a parchment. He caught it up and read, "We have waited past midnight and can delay no longer. We go to find the king. Follow us across the desert." Artaban sat down on the ground and covered his head in despair. "How can I cross the desert with no food and with a spent horse? I must return to the city, sell my sapphire, and buy a train of camels and provision for the journey. I may never overtake my friends. Only God the Merciful knows whether I shall not lose the sight of the king because I tarry to show mercy." Artaban traveled across the desert until he arrived at Bethlehem, 3 days after the other wise men had come to that place and found Mary and Joseph with the young child Jesus, and had laid their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh at his feet. As Artaban drew near Bethlehem, weary but full of hope, he took out the ruby and the pearl that he had brought to offer the newborn king. "For now, at last," he said, "I shall surely find him, though it be alone and later than my brethren. This is the place of which the Hebrew exile told me that the prophets had spoken, and here I shall behold the rising of the great light. But I must inquire about the visit of my brethren, and to what house the star directed them, and to whom they presented their tribute." The streets of the village seemed to be deserted. From the open door of a low stone cottage, he heard the sound of a woman's voice singing softly. He entered and found a young mother hushing her baby to rest. She told him of the strangers from the far east who had appeared in the village 3 days ago, and how they had said that a star had guided them to the place where Joseph of Nazareth was lodging with his wife and her newborn child, and how they had paid reverence to the child and given him many rich gifts. "But the travelers disappeared again," she continued, "as suddenly as they came. We were afraid at the strangeness of their visit. We could not understand it. The man of Nazareth took the babe and his mother and fled away that same night secretly, and it was whispered that they were going far away to Egypt. Ever since, there has been a spell upon the village. Something evil hangs over it. They say that the Roman soldiers are coming from Jerusalem to force a new tax from us, and the men have driven the flocks and herds far back among the hills and hidden themselves to escape it." The young mother laid the baby in its cradle and set food before Artaban, the plain fare of peasants, but willingly offered, and therefore full of refreshment for the soul as well as for the body. Artaban accepted it gratefully, and as he ate, the child fell into a happy slumber, and a great peace filled the quiet room. But suddenly there came the noise of a wild confusion and uproar in the streets of the village, a shrieking and wailing of women's voices, a clangor of brazen trumpets and clashing of swords, and a desperate cry, "The soldiers! The soldiers of Herod! They are killing our children!" The young mother's face grew white with terror. She clasped her child and crouched motionless in the darkest corner of the room, covering him with the folds of her robe, lest he should wake and cry. But Artaban went quickly and stood in the doorway of the house. The soldiers came hurrying down the street with bloody hands and dripping swords. At the sight of the stranger in his imposing dress, they hesitated with surprise. The captain of the band approached the threshold to thrust him aside, but Artaban did not stir. He looked at the soldier and then said in a low voice, "I am alone in this place, and I am waiting to give this jewel to the prudent captain who will leave me in peace." He showed the ruby, glistening in the hollow of his hand like a great drop of blood. The captain was amazed at the splendor of the gem. He stretched out his hand and took the ruby. "March on," he cried to his men. "There is no child here." Artaban re-entered the cottage. He turned his face to the east and prayed, "God of truth, forgive my sin. I've said the thing that is not to save the life of a child, and two of my gifts are gone. I have spent for man that which was meant for God. Shall I ever be worthy to see the face of the king?" But the voice of the woman, weeping for joy in the shadow behind him, said very gently, "Because you have saved the life of my little one, may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Then Artaban, still looking for the king, went to Egypt, seeking everywhere for traces of the little family that had fled from Bethlehem. He stayed for a time in a house in Alexandria, taking counsel with a rabbi who told him to seek the king not among the rich, but among the poor. He passed through countries where famine lay heavy upon the land and the poor were crying for bread. He made his dwelling in plague-stricken cities where the sick were languishing in helpless misery. He visited the oppressed and the afflicted in the gloom of subterranean prisons. Though he found no one to worship, he found many to serve. As the years passed, he fed the hungry, clothed the naked, healed the sick, and comforted the captive. One day, Artaban stood alone at sunrise, waiting at the gate of a Roman prison. He had taken from a secret resting place in his bosom the pearl, the last of his jewels. As he looked at it, a mellower luster, a soft and iridescent light, full of shifting gleams of azure and rose, trembled upon its surface. It seemed to have absorbed some reflection of the colors of the lost sapphire and ruby. 33 years of the life of Artaban had passed away, and he was still a pilgrim and a seeker after light. His hair was now white. His eyes, that once flashed like flames of fire, were dull as embers smoldering among the ashes. Worn and weary and ready to die, but still looking for the king, he had come for the last time to Jerusalem. He had often visited the holy city before, and had searched through its lanes and crowded hovels and black prisons without finding any trace of the family of Nazarenes who had fled from Bethlehem long ago. But now it seemed that he must make one more effort, and something whispered in his heart that, at last, he might succeed. It was the season of Passover. The city was thronged with strangers. But on this day, there was a singular agitation visible in the multitude. Artaban joined company with a group of people from his own country, Parthian Jews who'd come to keep the Passover, and inquired of them the cause of the tumult and where they were going. "We are going," they answered, "to the place called Golgotha, outside the city walls, where there is to be an execution. Have you not heard what has happened? Two famous robbers are to be executed, and with them one called Jesus of Nazareth, a man who has done many wonderful works among the people, so that they love him greatly. But the priests and elders have said that he must die, because he gave himself to be the Son of God. And Pilate has sent him to the cross, because he said he was King of the Jews." How strangely these familiar words fell upon the tired heart of Artaban. He said to himself, "The ways of God are stranger than the thoughts of men. And it may be that I shall find the king at last in the hands of his enemies, and shall come in time to offer my pearl for the ransom before he dies." So the old man followed the multitude with slow and painful steps toward the Damascus gate of the city. Just beyond the entrance of the guardhouse, a troop of Macedonian soldiers came down the street, dragging a young girl with torn dress and disheveled hair. The girl broke suddenly from the hands of her tormentors and threw herself at Artaban's feet, clasping him around the knees. "Have pity on me," she cried, "and save me. My father was a merchant of Parthia, but he is dead, and I am seized for his debts to be sold as a slave. Save me from a fate worse than death." Artaban trembled. It was the old conflict in his soul which had come to him in the palm grove of Babylon and in the cottage at Bethlehem. The conflict between the expectation of faith and the impulse of love. One thing only was sure to his divided heart. To rescue this helpless girl would be a true deed of love. And is not love the light of the soul? He took out the pearl. Never had it seemed so luminous, so radiant, so full of tender, living luster. He laid it in the hand of the slave. "This is your ransom, daughter. It is the last of my treasures which I kept for the king." While he spoke, the darkness of the sky thickened, and shuddering tremors ran through the earth, which heaved convulsively. The walls of the houses rocked. Stones were loosened and crashed into the street. The soldiers fled in terror. But Artaban and the girl whom he had rescued crouched helpless beneath the wall of the praetorium. What had he to fear? What had he to live for? He had given away the last remnant of his tribute for the king. He had parted with the last hope of finding him. The quest was over, and it had failed. But even in that thought, there was peace. He had been true to the light that had been given to him. And he knew that even if he could live his earthly life over again, it could not otherwise be than what it had been. One more lingering pulsation of the earthquake quivered through the ground. A heavy tile, shaken from the roof, fell and struck the old man on the temple. He lay breathless and pale, with his gray head resting on the young girl's shoulder, the blood trickling from the wound. As she bent over him, fearing that he was dead, there came a voice through the twilight, very small and still, like music sounding from a distance, in which the notes are clear, but the words are lost. The girl turned to see if someone had spoken from the window above them, but she saw no one. Then the old man's lips began to move as if in answer, and she heard him say, "Not so, my lord. For when saw I thee hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw I thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? When saw I thee sick or in prison and came upon thee? 33 years have I looked for thee, but I have never seen thy face, nor ministered to thee, my king." Again the girl heard a sound very faint and far away. But now it seemed as though she understood the words. "Verily I say unto thee, inasmuch as thou hast done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, thou hast done it unto me." A calm radiance of wonder and joy lit the pale face of Artaban. One long last breath of relief exhaled gently from his lips. The journey was ended. His treasures were accepted. The other wise man had found his king. For this king is the light of the world. Do we spend our days in search of this king? By looking into the faces of our brothers and sisters, especially those in pain, those impoverished, those who are marginalized, those in need or in want. Do we see the light that is Christ in them? Do we know where to find our King? Will we spend our days in search of him, in service to him, the way Artaban did? Amen.